Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
It's now time for Activate, a show brought to you by Amnesty International.
Haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to the September edition of Activate. Spring has sprung here in Otatahi, all very exciting. I hope it's sunny where you are. This month, I'm tackling a topic that may sound far from exciting at first blush, positively boring perhaps, but bear with me. I have found the Regulatory Standards Bill is actually a heady mix of some of the best bits of life: politics, principles, power, balancing competing interests, connectedness, and controversy. And perhaps my personal favourite, law. I am a lawyer after all. There's even been allegations by ACT leader David Seymour of bots driving fake submissions against it. So, now that I've got your attention, this month I am interviewing an economist. Given the architect of the bill, David Seymour, says the bill will make New Zealand more prosperous, I decided to interview Paul Dalziel, and he is a well-being economist. He is going to untangle this bill for us, highlight why it matters, and talk about his concerns. So without further ado, I welcome Paul to the show. Kia ora, Paul. Welcome to the show. And you are zooming in from local Otatahi.
I am. I live in Christchurch. Kia ora, Catherine.
Kia ora. Thank you for making time for us today. I thought that we could start by an introduction, please.
Certainly. These days, I am research economist at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance Aotearoa, which is a think and do tank promoting alternative visions for how we can care for people and planet through our economy. I was 40 years an academic, mostly at Lincoln University, where I was professor of economics and finished as director of their agribusiness and economics research unit.
Excellent. So this think tank sounds really interesting. Where do you get your funding from?
We have a variety of sources. A philanthropic family from Australia provides a substantial grant. The Peter McKenzie Project is providing annual grants in line with their kaupapa to address child poverty, child wellbeing. We have grants for specific projects, and we're doing well at the moment.
Excellent. Great. Good to hear. So I've asked you to come onto the show to help unpack the Regulatory Standards Bill, RSB, presented by ACT party leader David Seymour. It's complicated and controversial. For example, Sir Geoffrey Palmer, a constitutional legal expert, is quoted as saying it is the strangest piece of NZ legislation he has ever seen. So before we get stuck into things, though, I wanted to start with the basics. What is regulation anyway?
Certainly. So regulation begins with an Act of Parliament, and the Act normally empowers members of the Crown or sets controls on operations in the general economy, general population. And it may also empower what's called secondary legislation. And secondary legislation are regulations that are created by a ministry or a government department or some other organisation under the terms of its parental act to set benefit levels, to set standards for various types of activities, etc., etc., etc. So the two together, the principal act and any secondary legislation, that's what we mean by regulations.
Mm-hmm. And that can be anything from road rules to building rules, all sorts of regulation we basically pass through in our everyday health and safety, food safety in the supermarkets. It's part of everyday life.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
This bill, just a brief background for our listeners who may well know this already, but this is the fourth time it's been before Parliament. This time, though, it's looking much more likely to pass because it is part of the coalition agreement. What is this bill, then, this regulatory bill, trying to achieve? And in your opinion, do you think it will achieve its aim?
Yes, Kath, that's a good question. You said just a moment ago that regulations affect our daily lives. And so it's an important part of well-being, how well those regulations are designed and maintained. So the spirit of the legislation is that we want to improve the way regulations are designed and implemented. And I think everybody agrees that that is a worthy aim. Hmm. The way in which it does this is by setting up a regulatory standards board who will be empowered to investigate legislation and secondary legislation to see whether they meet certain standards that are set out within the bill at the moment, the Act in future. As well as that, any new Act would have to include a regulatory standards statement in which it explains whether or not all of its provisions are consistent with the set of principles set out in the legislation. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, will this be effective? And there are two big concerns at the moment. The first is there are already a whole range of institutions in place to try and improve the quality of regulations that are passed. So we have a legislation design advisory committee that sets out principles that are far more detailed than what are contained in this Act. There's a select committee called the Regulation Select Committee that examines all secondary legislation. And so when a government department creates a new regulation, it is brought to the attention of this committee. And if there is anything that concerns the committee, and in particular, it's asked to have regard to whether or not it trespasses unduly on personal rights and liberties, mm-hmm. then it has a responsibility to bring that to the attention of Parliament for further action. So there are already a whole range of processes in place. And the second concern is that the principles that are set out in the legislation are not binding. And they can't be binding because in this country we have a doctrine called parliamentary sovereignty, which means that no parliament can bind the hands of future parliaments. So this is recognised explicitly in the legislation. It says there's no legal rights created by the law. The government only has to give an explanation. We are departing from this principle and give a reason, which might be as simple as this is necessary to advance the purposes of the legislation. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't really achieve anything further than is already there.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you is, number one, it's unnecessary because we already have tools to improve the quality of legislation. And if that was the sole aim, there's much better ways to do it, more detail, etc. And secondly, it's not binding, so that's also problematic. Yes. So then our listeners may well have heard the controversy. Basically, there was very few submissions that were in support of this at the Select Committee. So it's now passed through the Select Committee. The Select Committee is going to report on it, I think I read, the 23rd of September. So again, it will be in the public eye. What can you say then about what's the problem?
So there are two issues you raise there. The first is, because it's not binding on Parliament, the Ministry has not been able to identify any quantifiable benefits from the legislation. So extra loops are introduced into the legislative process. It's sort of red tape for bureaucrats in a way. But because at the end of the day, Parliament can say, well, thank you for this advice, but we're carrying on anyway, it's hard to say what changes will result from the bill. But in the meantime, the best estimates are that it's going to cost something like $20 million per year to set up the structure for implementing the bill. And so that's $20 million that could go into social housing or into pay equity claims or all sorts of calls on government expenditure. And instead, we're going to be employing bureaucrats who, for the most part, will be saying, this bill is fine, nothing to worry about. From time to time, we'll say, we have identified an issue that needs to be addressed. And the minister can simply say, well, thank you for that advice. I'm carrying on anyway. And so the fundamental principle that a bill should be introduced only if it can be reasonably expected to result in benefits that outweigh the costs is not met by this bill.
Okay.
And so that's the first. And then the second concern is that the bill itself, I mean, this is the irony, it's called the Regulatory Standards Bill, but there are no standards in it. So the relative clause is a clause of principles. And so principles means legislation should do this, legislation should do that. Whereas a standard says legislation must do this, legislation must do that. And so it's a higher test. And you won't be surprised to know that there are standards for setting standards. You know, so, yeah. So the Ministry for Business, Innovation and Employment has a unit that helps people set standards, like, you know, in the building sector, there are standards. And so how do you design a standard? And they say it needs three things. It needs the involvement of expert professional advice. It needs consensus. You know, we all agree this is a standard and we're going to commit ourselves to the standard. And it has to be, there needs to be public consultation so that we have confidence. So all three of those, from your introductory remarks, are not met by the principles in the section of the bill. So, you know, Geoffrey Palmer is as expert as we come in this country, and he can't make any sense of the legislation. There's been no attempt to build consensus about, you know, what do we want to embed in the way we make regulations in this country. It's a the ministry itself in its regulatory impact statement talks about it being a very narrow set of principles that have been selected. And public consultation, as you say, overwhelming negative opinion in the submissions to the select committee. So there are no standards in the regulatory standards bill, and that is, it means it's not fit for purpose.
Not fit for purpose, yes. Okay, so if we drill further down then and think about these principles, because what I'm hearing from you is consensus, this idea of what do we value as New Zealanders? If we were truly going to make some kind of standard, wouldn't we include a broader range of principles that covered a broader range of people? Can you just explain for our listeners, one, what are the narrow principles that are in this bill? Because what I have heard from some commentary of yours is that it's less about what's in it and more about what's not in it.
Correct. So a good example of a different approach to setting regulatory standards comes from Wales. So Wales has a parliament that's accountable to parliament in the United Kingdom in London, but it is able to create its own regulations, and it thought about, well, let's set standards for that, and that produced what's called the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. And it sets out principles that regulations passed in Wales have to meet. So things like taking into account the impact of this regulation on other agencies, and most importantly, the impact that this legislation will have on the well-being of future generations. Now, the well-being of future generations is in our Public Finance Act, but it's not in this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so why is it as a country that we don't think that the well-being of future generations is an important standard for the regulations we pass today? So I don't think most New Zealanders would agree with that. I think most New Zealanders would, you know, they're thinking about their grandchildren going to kindergarten events, you know, going to prize giving at schools, going to fairs. We invest a lot in our children and our children's children. And so this should be reflected in a regulatory standards bill. Mm-hmm. And the Welsh example is a good example. They had a national consultation. It's not just a small group of people thinking, we think these are the really important principles that our legislation should respect. They had a public consultation that went on for some time. There were different ways that people could engage. So that when it finally came to passing the Act in 2015, so that's 10 years ago now, it could stand the test of time because it had broad public support.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's missing from this legislation. It's a particular point of view. And I suppose, you know, it does have some broad statements about the importance of law and so on, but its fundamental point is the protection of private property rights. And I think most New Zealanders would say, yes, we're in favour of that. We, you know, most of us own our own homes. We want to have our private property rights respected. But there are other rights that also need to be considered. And there are times when we give up proportionately private property rights to advance the common good. And the best example I can give comes from Ōtautahi, from Christchurch, where we had a really big problem with air pollution. I mean, seriously, at times in winter, that inversion layer meant that the smog just lay there for days and people were dying. And so we came up with regulations in which homeowners are no longer allowed to use open fires. Okay, so that's a sacrifice of a private property. I've got a house that had a fireplace in it and I'm no longer allowed to use it. And that's a good thing because it's a small sacrifice in return for advancing the common good, the public health of Christchurch City. And you know, I'm affected by that as well, so I do get some personal benefit from it. And the regulations were very careful. They said, well, look, let's think about people for whom this is going to impose a real burden. So can we give some subsidies to elderly people so that they can transform their heating arrangements? Can we give guidance on heating arrangements that will meet the law? So let's help people through the transition. But we accepted the principle that the private property rights had to be balanced against the public common good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also missing. You know, there's a nod in that direction, but it requires compensation to be paid. Now imagine if the Environment Canterbury had to think about how much compensation are we going to pay to every homeowner in Christchurch to give up using their open fires. Mm. And so I think it's far too narrow a focus, really, for the reality. And this is why we have MPs. Mm. And it's MPs' responsibility to weigh the balance between those sorts of trade-offs. You can't write a single piece of law in 2025 and think that that's going to solve that problem for us.
And what strikes me too is it feels like it's not responsive. So it's almost like it's freezing very narrow principles in a pocket of time and not responding to how our society might evolve in the future. You've picked out future generations. Of course, the major glaring absence is Te Tiriti. That was a major part of Amnesty International's submission. There's no talk about public health, environment, the common good. There's so many values that I think if you picked anyone off the street, they would be able to pick, say, five values that they say, yes, these are all the values that we, fairness, so many different parts to this. So then what I keep getting confused about is, okay, it's not legally binding, it's unnecessary, it's very narrow principles, yet we do have a whole lot of academics like yourself, experts in the field, various other politicians that are saying there's a subtle power in here, so don't be misled, be cautious about what the architect of this bill, Minister Seymour, is saying. And one academic in Victoria University, his name escapes me right now, but he talks about how It may incentivise certain types of law and discourage others. And that's sort of the constitutional magic of these kind of vetting regimes, that they have, you know, I've heard the use of the words, it's going to shape, it's going to shift, it's going to direct, it's going to pressure the way that our laws are going. What do you say to all of that then?
Well, I agree. I agree. And so the first thing it does is say that there is a problem. You know, there is a particular problem that our regulations have so many flaws, difficulties, fail to meet good standards, that we have to create a new piece of legislation and a new institution, a new ministry has been created to address the problem. But I think, genuinely, I can't see that there is a real problem here. So already it's framing the debate to saying we accept there is a problem here without evidence. So this is a question I have, is what legislation passed in the last 10 years passed because we did not have this act? What piece of legislation infringed individual property rights or departed from the rule of law to such an extent that we need to set up this whole new apparatus to address this issue? And if we're going to spend $20 million a year on this, you would think there needs to be a lot of problems. But really, every bill goes to a select committee. Every bill now has a regulatory impact statement addressing most of the things that are happening. Secondary legislation all has to be reported back to the House. It goes through its own select committee. So I don't think that there is any fundamental problem that needs to be addressed. And to go back to the start of your question, the one exception to this statement is tino rangatiratanga over Māori property rights. So even as we speak, there is a bill being presented to the House. It's halfway through the process, that is going to restrict the ability of the courts to recognise customary marine titles of Māori iwi. And this sort of legislation, you would think, well, good, this Regulatory Standards Act would address that point. This legislation is specifically excluded in a section of the bill. So Parliament is reserving the right to take property from the Indigenous Māori owners, managers of the coastal resources in this case, without any constraint. So I think you're right that this legislation does distort the parliamentary process as it has been designed in a certain direction, so that our MPs are elected to represent different points of view that come together in debate, and that leads to laws being passed. This process means that it gets distorted into an approach that is favoured by the ACT Party, mm-hmm. where the Regulatory Standards Board is able to comment on all legislation from that particular point of view, and that distorts the debate into that direction in a way that I don't think is healthy for the general debate that we want to have in Parliament at the passing of every bill.
I understand. And as some commentators have said, look, it's not necessarily a problem that we have the point of view of one party, as you just laid out. We have that often, but it comes down to the weight that this particular bill will have on all other bills and laws, future and past. That's the issue. And also how narrow this point of view is. It might not necessarily be a problem if that particular party had a really broad point of view. Again, we would say, look, it's an unnecessary piece of legislation anyway. It hasn't had good costing to see whether this is actually going to have any benefit. But it's the narrowness, I think, that we can keep coming back to, that it's only one or two principles about property, which again, that's okay, but it's not balanced with a whole lot of other principles that are really important to New Zealanders. Thank you for listening, my loyal listeners. I hope that you are enjoying spring and that you also enjoyed that interview from Paul Dalzell. Now, as is often the case with me, so many questions, so many topics to hit with this RSB. And so we did carry on the conversation. So next month, I will be playing part two of Paul Dalzell's interview. And he will continue to talk about his concerns with the Regulatory Standards Bill. So tune in next month to find out more. Mā te wā.
I want you to get together.